Might want to bring it down a notch, Teresa said. We don't want to wake the cranks down in the pits now, do we?
I never got to see them,
Chuck replied, faking sadness. At least Thomas hoped he was faking. They rounded a corner of the complex and stopped, a spectacular view having opened up in front of them. The lights on the outside of the wicked building were bright enough to illuminate the surrounding forest, the pine trees dusted with snow glowing in the reflection. Specks of snowflakes lit up the sky, the crashing of waves below the cliffs more distant than ever. Thomas felt like they were standing inside some sort of man-made set, the chill breeze coming from giant fans. A fake world, like the maze.
Man, it's so pretty, Teresa whispered.
Thomas expected a joke to pop out of Chuck, but he was just as caught up in the wonder of their surroundings.
Our world isn't so bad, he said. Once Wicked figures out how to make everyone well again, life will be pretty good, don't you think?
Thomas just nodded, a hand on Chuck's shoulder. Using his stolen tablet, Thomas had done his own research about the Scorch, a place where Wicked had set up some kind of secret operation. If Chuck could see the pictures of that desolate hellhole, he might change his tune a little. But the kid was right. The world had a lot of places like this forest on a cliff, the majestic ocean crashing against it. Places where humanity could settle in and rebuild.
Tom, over there,
Teresa said, her tone urgent. He followed her sightline to a group of trees about 100 feet away. A figure had stumbled out of the woods and fallen. Whoever it was got back up, brushed off the snow, then started walking straight toward Thomas's group. The guards quickly put themselves in front of the kids, raising their weapons.
We better get back, one of them said.
It's a crank, isn't it?
Chuck asked. He said it calmly, bravely, and Thomas burst with pride, so much so that it almost hurt.
Bingo, little man, the other guard replied. Don't worry, you're safe. Let's get inside.
Wait a sec, Teresa said. That's not a... I mean, that's Randall.
Thomas squinted against Wicked's bright lights, and she was right. It was him. Randall, lurching through the snow as if he'd lost something there and hoped to kick it into the air. The first guard lowered her gun.
I'll be damned. It is him.
What's he doing out here?
Thomas whispered.
What should we do?
Chuck asked, way too loudly. Thomas tried to shush him, but it was too late. Randall had stopped, his head snapping up. He saw them, and for a long moment, no one moved. Then Randall broke into action, struggling to get through the snow to them.
Sorry,
Chuck muttered.
Let's get back, the guard said more urgently. We need to tell Ramirez.
They turned their backs on Randall and jogged briskly toward the closest entrance to the looming complex. They were right in front of it when Randall shouted at them from behind.
Stop! Marion! Moreau! I just need to say something!
At hearing their names, the guards turned around, once again placing themselves in front of the kids and raising their weapons. Randall stepped out of the snowy grounds and stumbled onto the pavement, about 20 feet away from them. He looked awful. Eyes bloodshot. Nose bleeding. His cheeks hollow and gaunt. The skin at the right edge of his brow had split open, a streak of red painting the side of his face. Thomas stared at the poor man. What could he possibly be doing out here?
Speak fast then, Randall, the woman said. You don't look well. We need to get you some help.
Can't hide it anymore, can I?
Randall said, now bent over, leaning on his knees.
It's the darndest thing!
He lurched upright, swaying left, then right, before getting his balance.
The darndest thing! Trying to hide the flare from your bosses!
Thomas grabbed Chuck by the hand. The snow seemed to freeze in midair, no longer swirling, no longer dancing. no longer falling.
"All right, we're done here," the female guard said. "Open the door, Moreau. Get them inside and find a doctor, quick."
"You think you're special?" Randall yelled. "You really think they're not going to do the same thing to you they're going to do to them all?"
Moreau punched in the security code. There was a loud beep. The color on the display changed from red to green. Then a click rang through the air. The door popped open. The guard pulled it wide and stepped back. Thomas practically shoved Chuck through the entrance, then grabbed Teresa's arm and pulled her with him, running through. He didn't want to spend one more second out there with Randall, whom he could still hear yelling.
"You hear what I said?" the sick man shouted. "You're running from the wrong guy. I'm not the one you should be scared about. You hear me?"
The guard pulled the door closed on Randall's ramblings. Thomas peered through the small safety window and watched the man turn around and stumble back toward the forest.
"You can sleep on my floor tonight," Thomas said to Chuck.
They stood in the hall outside his door.
"I don't care if we get in trouble."
Teresa had gone into her room to use the bathroom, but had just come back out to join them. She had a troubled look on her face. Thomas looked at her, concerned.
"You want to sleep in here, too? I'm a little freaked out myself."
"Actually..."
"What's wrong?"
Thomas asked. She flicked her eyes at Chuck, who was lost in his thoughts. She spoke in Thomas's mind.
"Let's get him to sleep in your room. Then we need to go. Now."
"Wait, what?" Thomas said back.
"Go where?"
"Things are worse than you think," she said. "Look, just get him to sleep. Tell him bedtime stories for all I care. Whatever it takes, tap on my door when you're sure he's out."
"What's wrong?"
he asked again.
"You know what?"
she said aloud, ignoring his question. She gently brushed a strand of Chuck's hair out of his face, and he looked up at her, his eyes filled with the weight of all he'd just seen.
"I'm tired. Why don't you two go have your sleepover, and I'll see you in the morning. And don't worry."
She leaned over a little to be able to look him in the eyes.
"Seriously, Randall is sick, and they'll take care of him. We're immune, remember? There's nothing to worry about."
She smiled a big warm smile at the boy. She was so reassuring, Thomas almost believed her himself.
"Good night," Thomas said to her. "Come on, Chuck."
"Good night,"
she said back, then slipped into her room. Thomas closed the door behind him and threw a couple of blankets on the floor for Chuck. As he was settling into his makeshift bed, the boy once again reminded Thomas that he was far smarter than they often gave him credit for.
"Yeah, she's right. We're immune," he said in the darkness. "But what about all those people who work for Wicked?"
Chapter 45 231.5.4 11:41 p.m. Teresa opened the door before he even tapped twice.
"Come in,"
she whispered urgently, though her calm focus scared him. He stepped inside and she closed the door.
"What's up?"
She held up a piece of paper. Thomas took it. A few words were scribbled on it in pencil.
"Come see me ASAP, Dr. Page."
Thomas looked up at Teresa.
"Okay, now really, what's going on?" "That note was slipped under my door while we were outside." She paused, breathed. "I'm pretty sure Dr. Page knows what happened out there tonight. It has to be related to Randall somehow."
Thomas leaned back against the wall. Something was terribly wrong. He just knew it. A horrible fear was clawing its way up his chest. He felt an overwhelming uncertainty, a shifting of the world.
"What do we do?"
he asked. Teresa put a hand on Thomas's shoulder.
"Let's just go find Dr. Page. She's the smartest person I've ever met. If she wants to talk to us, then we need to go."
"Okay,"
Thomas said dully.
"If there's anyone we can trust, it's her."
Teresa gave him a nod of encouragement, then opened the door and left the room. He followed her. He knocked softly on Dr. Page's door. The last thing they wanted to do was wake up any of the other doctors or psychs along the same hall. When she didn't answer, he knocked a little harder. Finally, he heard a soft voice from the other side.
"Who is it?"
"Thomas," he said, a thought suddenly striking him. What if the note hadn't actually been from her?
"Aunt Teresa, we got your message?"
The door opened a crack. He'd never seen Dr. Page so disheveled. Her hair was down and tangled from sleep, and her face was clean of makeup. She opened the door wider and nodded for them to enter.
"I'm glad you came."
Dr. Page sat at her desk, Thomas and Teresa both on the bed, side by side, waiting for her to speak. He found himself thinking of Newt, maybe the one he liked most of all of them, not immune. There were only two futures for Newt. They found a way to treat this sickness, or one day he went insane, ending up like Randall. Dr. Page finally spoke, and while she seemed as calm and contained as ever, her eyes said something different. Thomas saw fear in them.
"I've been dreading this day for months, wishing we could last just a little while longer," she said.
She stood up, stood quietly for a moment, thinking, then turned to look at them.
"There's a reason I've fought for you and sought your help so many times," Dr. Page said. "You are part of this organization. You've grown up here as one of us, and I know we have the same goals. I know that I can trust you to do anything to help us achieve our mission. And now I need you to trust me. Can you do that?"
Thomas looked at Teresa, and she looked back. He could feel what she was thinking. They both nodded. The doctor flashed them a warm smile.
"Yes, I thought so," she said. "Okay, well, we have no choice now. Once we start this, there's absolutely no going back."
She took a second to look each of them in the eye.
"So I need to ask you both. Are you ready?"
Thomas stood. Teresa stood. They both nodded again.
"Okay then," Dr. Page said. "I've been suspicious for a while now that certain wicked officers have been hiding information from us that can potentially undermine everything we're doing here. Some of our top people haven't even shown their faces in weeks. It's time to initiate the protocol."
She paused before she spoke again, took a breath.
"It's time for the purge."
Chapter 46 231.5.5 12:33 a.m. Dr. Page marched down the hall, confident step after confident step, her whole demeanor different from anything Thomas had ever seen before. It was like she'd accepted some woolly mantle of responsibility and wore it high on her shoulders. He found himself believing she could save this situation.
"We have to get everything done in the next 24 hours," she said quietly over her shoulder. "I have plenty of help on my end, and Eris and Rachel will help you on yours."
"Where are we going?"
Teresa asked.
"What's the purge?"
Dr. Page stopped at the elevator, pressed the call button, and stepped in when the car arrived, speaking as the door closed.
"First things first. At the end of every day, Wicked requires a mandatory blood test of its members. We've always understood the importance of monitoring for contamination."
She entered the floor number and the lift started moving.
"But over the last several months, I've noticed some strange activity. There's been an undercurrent of suspicion. And then I discovered some of our personal health data has been breached. Chancellor Anderson finally decided that all results would have to go through him before being disseminated to the medical staff. Well, I receive a general report every night, and not one person has tested positive. But
That's according to the reports I'm seeing through the Chancellor. The elevator came to a stop, the familiar chime dinged, and the doors opened. Thomas and Teresa followed Dr. Page out and down yet another hallway. "But I started noticing symptoms recently," she continued. "Even the Chancellor himself is showing signs of infection. I'm almost certain now that our beloved leader has been fudging the reports. I saw Randall on the security feeds tonight. And if Randall is sick, well, it's impossible he's the only one." Dr. Page stopped in front of a door that Thomas had only seen once before, the time he'd been invited there to meet the Chancellor himself.
"But why haven't we noticed anything?" Teresa asked. "I mean, besides Randall, we haven't seen any signs people are sick."
Dr. Page nodded as if she'd anticipated the question.
"It may be early for some. Others further along may be in hiding somewhere. Makes me wonder if Randall got out from wherever that is. What happened tonight with him made me realize how serious our situation has gotten. If the results are being faked, like I think, I need to initiate the safety protocol to ensure we remain healthy and we can continue our work. I have to take charge. Tonight."
Thomas couldn't believe how quickly things were escalating. The doctor had never looked so grave, so determined.
"First, we have to get every last one of those results from the blood tests, from the original results, not the summary report. We'll find out who's sick and who isn't, and then we'll deal with things."
Thomas was trying to sort through the whirlwind of information.
"How do we get into his office? Aren't the security feeds following us?"
She smiled, a brief break in the clouds.
"Which question should I answer first?"
"The second one," Teresa said for him.
"Security."
Page nodded.
"Let's just say there are many people who owe me favors here. That and everyone is so scared about getting sick, they're depending on us to guarantee their health. Ramirez is terrified of succumbing to it, and he thinks I'm best suited to make sure the cure actually happens. The sad truth is that Chancellor Anderson's time leading Wicked has to come to an end."
Thomas didn't know what to think of that.
"And this office? How do we get in without Anderson knowing about it?"
At some point, Dr. Page's smile had completely vanished.
"Oh, he'll know about it. He's in there right now. Shall we go in?"
She reached into a pocket and pulled out a surgical mask, slipped it onto her face.
"I guess you guys don't need one of these, eh?"
Her eyes showed the smile had returned. Dr. Page opened the unlocked door and stepped inside the office of the Chancellor. Another room was attached to the back of his office, a private space to relax or hold more intimate meetings. They found Anderson in there, asleep, half of his body draped on a couch, the other half hanging precariously toward the floor.
"How did you know?"
Teresa whispered, so quietly that Thomas barely heard her. The doctor motioned for them to go back into the main office, and then she gently closed the door to the private room where the Chancellor slept.
"You can't imagine the precautions I've taken to avoid catching the flare,"
the woman said, her words muffled through her mask.
"Extreme. I wear this mask almost 24/7 now, and always when I'm in a confined space like this with others who are potentially infected. I wash my hands and face every half hour. I prepare my own food."
She looked down at her hands.
"I have to take some risks, of course. Every day. I could hardly call myself a doctor if I didn't." "But what about this?"
Teresa asked, pointing over her shoulder in the direction of Anderson's private room.
"He's one of the reasons I'm so cautious. I've come here to visit him once a week or so for months. We'd developed a friendship, even before all this started. We've talked for hours upon hours about our former lives, Wicked, the blueprint's progress. He stopped bothering to lock the door over a month ago. But my point is, over that time, he's changed." "Who else do you think might have it?"
Teresa asked.
"We're about to find out, if he hasn't destroyed the original test results."
She went to the Chancellor's desk, scattered with the framed photos of his lost loved ones they'd seen on their previous visit, and opened up his display screen.
For all his security fears, he hasn't been very original with passwords.
She smiled at that, then got to work, using the keyboard as well as the touch functions on the screen itself. A blue glow filled the room with a ghostly pall.
"Shouldn't take too long," she said absently.
Thomas was struck with a sudden thought. What if he wasn't really immune like they'd always told him? He did worry about that every once in a while, but surely he would have gotten the disease by now. A memory of the horrible crank pits flashed through his mind. Dr. Page maneuvered her way through several layers of security on the Chancellor's computer until she finally got to a spreadsheet listing the full roster of wicked employees in the complex, from cafeteria workers to doctors and psychs to the test subjects themselves. She scrolled through a few records until she got to a tab for administration. She clicked on it, and an image of Chancellor Anderson's face flashed onto the screen. His beaming smile couldn't have been more incongruous with the situation at hand. Dr. Page dove deeper into the data and found the test results from the end of the day before. Although he'd basically already accepted what it would be, when Thomas saw the verification literally flashing right before his eyes, in red, no less, it sent a chill to every corner of his body. Chancellor Kevin Anderson had the flare. And as it turned out, so did a few others at Wicked. Chapter 47 2:31.5.5 3:42 a.m. 19 of the 131 doctors, psychs, scientists, technicians, nurses, and other staff inside the Wicked complex turned out to be sick. All high-ranking officials, mostly in Anderson's circle. No wonder they'd conspired to keep it from everyone else. Dr. Page had whisked Thomas and Teresa back to her room and locked them inside, explaining that she now had to fully initiate the purge protocol and make sure everything was in motion. That she'd return soon. 2 hours later, she came back, and she had Eris and Rachel with her. As they came in from the hallway, Dr. Page dropped 4 loaded backpacks onto the floor.
"What are those for?" Teresa asked. "I'll explain everything," the doctor answered. "I'm going to need the 4 of you desperately today."
Thomas gave them a friendly nod, which was returned. Eris seemed to have grown older, lines crossing his face like little marks of worry. Rachel had cut her hair even shorter, and there was a sadness in her dark eyes. But she stood confidently, and something about these 2 encouraged Thomas. Dr. Page showed no signs of wearing down. She'd taken charge with gusto.
"This is what my people have figured out," she said.
"Anderson has all the infected hidden away in Sector D, and judging from their symptoms, a few of them appear to be pretty far along. It explains why we haven't seen their faces around lately. I've locked down that entire wing of the complex. I've checked and rechecked the original medical tests from yesterday. Other than Anderson, who's still in his office, and Randall, somewhere out in the forest, it seems that we have all the infected contained. Everyone outside of Sector D is clean." She paused for a couple of deep breaths.
"But we can't waste a single second. We need to clear those people out, and we need to do it fast. I have some brave guards who are willing to risk infection, but I just can't bring myself to lose another life to this disease, which is where you come in."
She stopped speaking, letting her words hang in the air, and the realization of what she was saying suddenly hit Thomas like a lightning bolt.
"You mean..."
She nodded, her expression showing how hard it was to say what came next.
"You're all immune, and you're the oldest and strongest of those not in the maze. We're dealing with people who are very sick and weak. More important, though, is that most of them are asleep, which is why we have to act right now. These backpacks have syringes filled with a solution that's been prepared for this task. All it takes is a quick plunge into their necks, and the job is done.
You should be able to do it with no problems.
Thomas felt his knees go weak and sat on the floor to hide it. Eris finally said the words no one else could.
So, we're just going to kill them all? They'll die anyway,
Teresa said immediately, shocking Thomas out of his thoughts.
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
he said, standing back up. He looked at his friend, wondering if this was some attempt to relieve her of guilt, or if she'd really grown such a hard shell around herself for protection.
We have to think this through.
No, Tom,
Teresa snapped.
It's be tough now, or everyone dies later.
Thomas slumped back to the floor, so dazed his vision had gone a little blurry.
He had no response.
She'd also cut off their mind connection. All he could do was look at her.
I'm sorry,
she said, the fierceness melting away.
I'm sorry, Tom. Really.
I know this whole thing is awful, but it'll be less awful if we just accept it and get it done.
She's right,
Dr. Page said.
The four of you will be adults soon. You can handle this. We know exactly where the infected are. You just need to go from room to room and inject them.
She gestured toward the backpacks.
We've packed guns, and we have launchers for you as well. Just in case. I need to stress that. Just in case. I think you'll be able to do this to them as they sleep, and I'll have guards posted, despite the risk of infection, if things go south.
The room went silent for a long time. Dr. Page was at least allowing them a moment to think through it.
Count me in, Teresa finally said.
Me too,
Eris added.
The ends justify the means,
Rachel said somewhat bitterly.
It should be Wicked's official logo. They should have a giant banner draped across the front entrance. The ends justify the means. But I'm in. Well, it's true, isn't it?
Eris asked.
If you could save 1 billion people by killing 1 million people, shouldn't you do it? You know, hypothetically speaking. If you really had that choice and said no, then aren't you actually killing 1 billion people? I'd rather kill 1 million than 1 billion.
Now it was Eris's turn to get a perplexed look from Thomas. It seemed like the world had started spinning in the opposite direction. Dr. Page nodded at the three who'd accepted her challenge.
Thomas? She asked.
He didn't respond. He stared at the floor.
Tom, Teresa said, I need you with me on this. With us. Please.
He didn't feel well. He didn't feel well at all. He stood up. His thoughts raced as he searched for the perfect words. He knew that they would do what Dr. Page needed them to do. They'd come too far to turn back now. He had friends out in the maze, Chuck to think about, a world to think about. He'd do it. The purge. It had to be done. And now he needed to say something smart, something profound, something that would bind them together and start the terrible journey.
This sucks.
Chapter 48 231.5.5 4:15 a.m. After the four of them had agreed to the mission, Dr. Page went to get a few security guards to give them instruction on the syringes and weapons and to go over the best plan of attack to coordinate the entire effort. While they waited, Teresa reopened their connection.
You okay?
She asked.
I don't know how I feel about this.
She paused for what seemed like forever, and he could sense her mind racing. He waited, even though he wanted to say more.
Look,
she finally replied. That word always meant she was about to reveal her soul to him.
Remember when I told you everything about where I came from? When my name was Didi?
A sharp pain came across with that name, so strong that Thomas had to shift in his seat.
Yeah, I remember. It was a horrible place, Tom,
she continued.
I can't even... It was horrible. I saw countless people catch the flare. Remember running from cranks. Remember... The point is that I keep telling myself that so many parts of the world are like that right now. So many little girls, just like I used to be, are watching it happen, dying in the middle of all those horrors. And Wicked wants to save the world from that. Save all those little girls and all those little boys.
I know, Thomas said. We all saw bad things.
Not like I did. I was basically at ground zero. The infected were concentrated in one place, and the virus hadn't been diluted yet. We're going back to that as it spreads. One day the whole world, every town and city, will be like it was in North Carolina, and then everyone will be dead.
Thomas stood up, wishing he could somehow escape this depressing talk.
I get it, Teresa. I get it. We need to find a cure. You really think I haven't heard this speech 1,000 times?
He could tell she was frustrated with him.
Tom, the speech isn't empty. We have to find a cure, and we can't look at things in the short term anymore. We're talking about extinction. All that matters is the end result. How we get there, we just do it. Okay? Whatever it takes.
So we kill them?
Thomas asked.
That's what you're telling me?
The four of us are going to walk around these buildings and just slaughter every last person who has the flare?
Yes. That's what we're going to do.
Thomas tried to offer another solution.
Can't we just move them to the crank pits? Seriously? You think they want to be thrown into a cage with monsters? Tom, you're not even thinking straight.
A wave of frustration crashed through their connection, powerful enough to make Thomas wince.
So we kill them.
It felt like letting go of some vital part of being human.
We make sure Dr. Page can get these facilities under control. Keep both mazes running. It's not about killing anyone. It's about saving.
Thomas sighed.
I'll do my best.
What else was he going to do? She came over to him, leaned in to whisper in his ear.
This is so important, she said. The most important thing in the world.
Yeah, he breathed. Because Wicked is good.
A few minutes later, the door opened. Several uniformed guards came in, followed by Dr. Page.
Let's get you prepped, she said. Time is running out.
Chapter 49 231.5.5 5:44 a.m. Thomas's backpack was heavy. He and his friends had full packs carrying everything they'd need. 2 guns each, replacement cartridges for the launchers they had strapped across their shoulders, and enough syringes to put down a zoo full of elephants. Better to have too much than not enough. They ran through the hallways of the complex to their first target, Chancellor Anderson. A good man with whom Thomas had never had much of a problem. A good man who was now utterly insane. They had to take care of him first before heading down to Sector D. They'd been running for a good 5 minutes when Eris halted and held a hand up. Teresa almost ran him over before she stopped.
Did you hear that?
Eris whispered. Thomas listened, trying to pick out something unusual over the hum of the ventilation system and the sound of their heavy breaths from running.
Nope,
Thomas said, even as the others shook their heads.
Just keep listening,
Eris responded, his gaze shifting to the ceiling, as if what he'd heard had come from above.
There!
A low wail, like a child crying. Now that he heard it, Thomas couldn't believe he hadn't noticed it before. High-pitched, sad, it echoed along the corridor, making it impossible to tell what direction it came from. Thomas imagined a child at the bottom of a well,
Maybe it's coming through the vents from Sector D, Rachel suggested.
The pitiful noise ceased.
Or it could be one of the kids, Thomas said. Dr. Page has them all hiding somewhere.
Teresa spoke up.
We need to get Anderson resolved before we can think about anything else. Let's go.
Eris had no objection. The four of them set off, running again. The door to Anderson's office was closed, not locked. Teresa stepped forward and opened it. Thomas held his breath, half expecting the man to jump out at them like a zombie. Nothing but quiet and dark. And a smell. A horrible smell. Teresa nudged the door wider and stepped inside, launcher held out in front of her, ready to fire. Eris went next, then Rachel. Thomas last. The blue glow of the workstation still shone. Nothing had changed since they'd last been there. Except for the putrid stink of body odor and urine, even feces. The smell assaulted Thomas, and he gagged, falling to one knee as his throat closed. He tried to pull himself together.
You okay?
Teresa asked in his mind.
Yeah. Is he in there?
He nodded toward the back room.
Let's go see.
But Eris had already moved to that door and lightly kicked it open. Another wave of wretched stink came wafting out of the darkness. Thomas got back to his feet and stood behind Eris and Teresa, staring inside, trying to make things out. Rachel was right next to him, holding her nose.
"Is he dead?"
she asked.
"No,"
came a rasp of a voice. Anderson. It barely sounded human.
"No. Not dead. Not your lucky day."
He let out a series of wet, racking coughs.
"Oh, man," Thomas said. His stomach was not handling all this very well. "Get a light on in this place."
"It might hurt his eyes."
This from Eris, who fingered the panel anyway. Lights blazed as bright as noon. Anderson screamed, clawing at his eyes. He writhed on the floor in front of the couch, which looked like he'd been lying on it for months.
"Turn it off! Turn it off!"
Eris dimmed the lights, which Thomas silently thanked him for. The sight before them was almost too much for Thomas to bear. He stared at the man who'd once been their leader. Blood covered his face and his clothes, and his hair was matted and greasy. He'd lost weight, his skin pale and sweaty. He lay on his side, his mouth set in a permanent grimace, baring teeth that were rimmed in red. And then Thomas saw why. The man only had two fingers left. Bloody nubs remained where the others had once been.
"Oh, my,"
Eris said when he noticed, covering his face with the crook of one arm.
"He didn't. He didn't."
"He did,"
replied Rachel, her voice cold. Thomas couldn't look. He turned away from it all and went to the display screen on the former chancellor's desk. It showed the communication system, and there on the screen was a memo that Anderson had been writing. Luckily, it appeared to have never been sent, because the memo itself was harrowing.
"Guys," he said, "listen to what Anderson almost sent to everybody while we were gone."
And then Thomas read it to them.
"Wicked memorandum. Date 231.5.5. To, from, re. I only have two fingers left. I wrote the lies of my farewell with two fingers. That is the truth. We are evil. They are kids. We are evil. We should stop. Let the Munis have the world. We are evil. We can't play God. We can't do this to kids. You're evil. I'm evil. My two fingers tell me so. How can we lie to our replacements? We give them hope when there is none. Everyone will die. No matter what. Let nature win.
He's so messed up, Teresa said over Thomas's shoulder as he read Anderson's last words.
I'd say it's beyond that, Thomas replied.
My fingers,
Anderson moaned from the other room.
Why'd you eat my fingers?
Thomas felt a crushing heartbreak as he followed Teresa to Anderson's side again. The man had curled himself up into a ball and was rocking back and forth.
Only two left,
the man said, his words floating with delirium.
I hope the other eight were tasty. I always thought it'd be me that ate them. But no, it had to be you, didn't it?
Thomas shared a glance with each of his friends. After all they'd seen, was this the saddest? To see a man who'd led this giant operation with such vigor turn into a sniveling lunatic. Anderson's body contorted, seemingly every muscle twisting in on itself. He twitched for a few seconds, then relaxed. His wild glare slowly left the floor and followed the line of Thomas's body from his feet to his thighs to his torso, and finally met his gaze.
They'll take your brain in the end, Anderson said. They'll take it out, look at it for a few hours, then probably eat it. You should have run when you had the chance.
Thomas couldn't move. The sudden clarity in the man's eyes scared him more than anything else that day.
What do we do?
Eris asked. Their former chancellor kept talking, but he'd shrunk back into a fetal position, and his words were lost in his moans of agony. He stared at the floor right in front of his face.
We have to put him out of his misery, Teresa answered.
And then I think it'll be easier for us to take care of everyone else. But we need to get moving.
A month or two ago, Thomas would have been shocked at her callousness. Even a few days ago. But not anymore. They were now dealing with the cold, hard truth of their situation. Whoever these people had been, they were no more. Thomas suddenly decided that he had to do it. He had to be the one, right here, right now. If someone else did the deed, he might never build up the nerve again.
It has to be me, he whispered, mostly to himself.
He wasn't even sure they'd heard him, but they certainly noticed when he swung the backpack off his shoulders and set it beside him. He knelt down right next to Anderson, and blood from the man's injuries seeped into the knees of his pants. The others made no move to stop him. Thomas unzipped his pack, rummaged inside it, and pulled out one of the syringes filled with Dr. Page's concoction. He snapped off the protective tab of plastic on the end of the needle, then positioned it in his hand, his thumb lightly pressed against the button that controlled the electronic plunger.
"Are we sure about this?" Rachel asked. "I mean, we're sure."
"Yes," Thomas replied, short and curt. Nothing else to say. Anderson rolled over onto his back, trembling now. His eyes widened as he stared at the ceiling, murmuring unintelligibly. Thomas leaned in closer, syringe out over the man's head. There was no sign of awareness in Anderson's expression, no sign of humanity left. Teresa touched Thomas on the shoulder, startling him. He looked back at her, and her eyes were brimming with tears.
"Sorry," she said in his mind.
"I'm with you on this. You can do it."
He nodded, then turned to Anderson, still shaking ever so slightly on the ground, nothing more than simple shivering. Thomas brought the silver tip of the needle to the side of the former chancellor's neck. Hesitated. Anderson's gaze shifted, his eyes falling on Thomas. He whispered something, a word, repeated it over and over, saliva foaming at the corners of his mouth.
Please, please, please.
Please, 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 please!
Thomas didn't know if he was encouraging him to do it or begging him to stop. But he slowly slid the needle into the soft flesh of the man's neck and pressed the button that controlled the plunger. A hiss sounded as the deadly fluid in the vial drained out of the syringe and into Anderson's body. They all watched in silence as the former leader of Wicked grew still, let out one last long breath, and closed his eyes. Chapter 50 231.5.5 7:13 a.m. There were 18 left. Thomas and his friends stood in the security room once governed by Ramirez and Randall. Dr. Page and a few of her new staff analyzed the rooms and hallways of Sector D.
"Everyone is still in the same positions," Dr. Page said, scanning the security feeds. "Maybe we make a goal for you to reach 5 of them, then come back here and regroup. Assess whether anything has changed."
Thomas absently watched the camera feeds coming from the maze while the others focused on Sector D. Near the homestead, despite the late hour, Albie and Newt were locked in an argument with Nick, who long ago separated himself from the others as the clear leader. Without sound, the tussle didn't have any context. At least no punches had been thrown. Most of the other gladers were asleep.
"They have no idea what's going on in here," Thomas said, a little surprised that he'd spoken aloud. "I guess that's a good thing."
Teresa looked his way. She seemed ready to reproach him. They had slightly more pressing matters, but then softened.
"I know. For once, life is tougher out here than in there." "I guess the tables have turned," Rachel said.
"Guys," Dr. Page cut in. She gestured toward the cameras focused on the Wicked complex itself.
"The plan?" "Sorry," Rachel murmured.
Thomas focused his attention back on the relevant feeds. A guard pointed at one in particular.
"Room D-17. A rec room. A few of them are sleeping on the floor in there. That should be your first stop after entering the sector."
"Maybe they're dead," Teresa added.
Dr. Page leaned closer to the screens, her lips moving as she counted.
"And there's our 5. It's a good plan. Go take care of them, then come back here and we'll show you where to go next."
"Take care of them," Thomas thought. What a nice way to put it. They grabbed their backpacks full of death and headed out the door toward Sector D. After a guard let them through the locked-down entrance, Thomas and the others headed for the assigned room. They'd almost made it when movement in the hall ahead stopped them in their tracks. Eris had taken the lead and suddenly jumped back, pushing the others around the closest corner.
"There's a couple of people up there," he whispered, his back to the wall, panting. "I saw them too," Teresa said, "which means they probably saw us."
With perfect timing, a shout rang through the hall.
"Hey, you kids!"
A man, his voice on the edge of hysterics.
"Come here, my little subjects!"
This filled Thomas with a feeling of such horror that it made him shiver. Sweat broke out on his arms and forehead, a flush of heat making him unbearably hot.
"How many?"
he asked. Eris peeked around the corner, then jerked back to face the others.
"2 men. One's crawling on the ground, the other's walking, but he's using the wall to hold him up. They're getting really close, and man, they look seriously messed up."
Thomas appreciated the detailed report, but it only made him feel worse.
"Do we go back and regroup?" "No, we rush them," Teresa said. "Why put it off? The 4 of us can take these 2 easily."
Rachel was nodding as she spoke, and one look at Eris showed he agreed as well. Thomas sighed in defeat.
"What do you mean by messed up?"
"The crawling dude is totally naked," Eris answered. "Scratches all over his body. The one stumbling along the wall looks like he puked up about 7 breakfasts all over his shirt. And his hair, I think he ripped some of it out. It's nasty.
You think they're all like this? Thomas asked, overwhelmed by the task they had before them. I didn't know they were so near the Gone.
A terrible wail of anguish sounded down the hall, a long, mewling sound that ended in something close to giggles.
They were getting closer.
You saw Anderson, Teresa whispered. Those left have to be as bad as him, or a couple of steps away from it.
Thomas nodded, trying to encourage himself.
Okay, okay. What do we do?
Teresa swung her backpack off her shoulder just enough to unzip it and look inside. She pulled out a pistol, then two syringes. She handed the syringes to Thomas.
It'll be the last resort, she said,
hefting the gun in her right hand, finger already on the trigger.
Eris and Rachel, you hit them first with launcher grenades. Once they're down, Thomas, you run up to them and inject the poison. I'll be right beside you. If they make a move, I'll take care of them.
Thomas stared at her, half impressed and half terrified of his closest friend. But mostly, he was thankful she'd taken charge.
Okay, he said, too smart to argue.
Nothing about this was going to be pleasant, and the sooner they got to it, the sooner they'd be done.
Sounds good,
Eris replied.
You guys ready?
Thomas, one death-tipped syringe gripped in each hand, nodded. Rachel held up her launcher in answer. Teresa said,
Go!
Eris pushed off from the wall with a grunt and ran around the corner, yelling with adrenaline. Rachel went next, her weapon held ready, then Thomas, then Teresa, her gun the last line of defense. The sound of the launcher charging filled the air, followed by the burst of power as a grenade catapulted toward the man moving along the wall. His hair had indeed been ripped out in spots, leaving red, bloody welts. The grenade hit him square in his chest. He let out a howl as tiny tendrils of lightning danced across his body, and he fell to the floor. There he suffered spasm after spasm as the launcher's power tried to fry him from the inside out.
Your turn, Thomas!
Eris yelled as he stepped forward, already aiming for the other man in case Rachel missed. Thomas ran toward the first victim, then slid along the tile floor, coming to a stop just a foot or so from the man's head. He gripped the syringe, letting it hover just inches above the man's face, waiting for the streaks of white powder to fade. He heard a second launcher shot, then a third, followed by rapid thumps of contact. A cry like that of some primal beast pierced the air. Thomas saw his chance below him, the charges of electricity dwindling. He stabbed the needle of the syringe into the crank's neck and released the poison. He scrambled away, kicking at the floor with his feet, until his back met the opposite wall, where he stood up. The man's eyes rolled back in his head, and he flopped over. The syringe bounced back and forth, as if dancing on its needle, pivoting in the soft folds of the neck.
17, Thomas thought.
There were 17 cranks left in the complex.
Over here! Rachel yelled. Hurry!
She stood above the second man, who was still convulsing from her launcher shot. His battered, purpling body was like a dark storm cloud, sending little bolts of lightning down to die in the floor tiles. Thomas ran to him. Static and sparks filled the air as he fell to his knees. He knelt forward and plunged the second syringe into the man's neck, releasing the vial of liquid death. Teresa was there, two hands tightly gripping her pistol, aiming down at the man's head just in case. Rachel and Eris stood right behind her, struggling to catch their breath.
I think that does it, Thomas said. We just killed two people without any of us getting a single scratch.
Cranks,
Teresa replied, finally letting herself relax as she dropped the gun to her side.
Not people. Cranks.
Thomas got to his feet.
I didn't realize those were two different things.
She gave him a hard look that scared him.
Room D-17,
Eris said between breaths.
Stick to the plan.
Teresa turned away from Thomas to lead the way. Chapter 51.
231.5.5, 7:47 a.m.
D-17, Eris said, scanning the rooms as they jogged past. He pointed.
Here it is!
Thomas, who felt like everyone else had taken much more initiative so far that day, stepped up to the door and placed his ear against the flat surface. He pressed in, hoping to hear nothing. He wanted them asleep or dead.
Anything?
Teresa asked. Thomas shook his head. Then,
no, wait.
He pressed his ear to the door again. A low moaning sound was clearer.
Yeah, there's at least one awake.
They prepared themselves much as they had for the encounter in the hallway. According to the cameras, five cranks were on the other side of the door, immobile. Thomas squeezed three syringes in his right hand, two in his left, and Eris and Rachel both held their launchers, fully charged and loaded, behind him. That left Teresa with the gun again, and Thomas had a feeling that this time she'd be forced to use it. When everyone was ready to go, Teresa used her free hand to push open the door. It swung open into a dimly lit room, the scents of body odor and rotten breath wafting out like a diseased wind. Thomas scrunched up his face at the foul smell, fighting his gag reflex as he slipped inside. Rachel, Eris, and Teresa followed, weapons ready. A quick sweep established the scene for Thomas, and his rapidly thumping heart slowed. The room was a gathering spot, filled with chairs and couches, entertainment screens, tables for pool and ping pong. The five people they'd spied earlier were congregated in the corner to his left. A man lay on a couch, arm dangling off the side, another man on the floor at his feet. Two women were sprawled side by side, also on the floor, at the foot of two chairs, their arms draped across each other as if to comfort. The last person, a man, sat in a chair, his head lolling back in sleep, great booming snores erupting from his wide-open mouth. Eris and Rachel quietly stepped up to the group, aiming their weapons. A long moment of silence passed. Then that familiar electronic whine filled the air, immediately followed by a series of cracks as the launchers fired in quick succession. Five distinct thumps meant that they'd hit their marks. Blue lightning lit up the air as the cranks' bodies convulsed with electricity.
Now!
Eris yelled at Thomas.
Here, I'll help you!
He came up to him, took syringes, passed one to Rachel. Teresa kept her gun trained on the five spasming figures as the three approached. Thomas ran to the two men on the floor by the couch, their spasms lessening as the little tendrils of electricity faded to a few sparks here and there. Gripping a syringe in each hand, his thumb pressed against the dispenser button, he knelt down and stabbed the two needles into the crank's necks, released the poison. He scooted away and got back to his feet, shocked at how smoothly things had gone down. Rachel had taken care of the man in the chair, and Eris was just finishing up with the women on the ground. That meant there were only 11 left in the entire sector. Aware of the horrors of it all on some level, the fact they were murdering actual human beings, Thomas pushed it away, focused on the necessity. He felt an elation that filled his chest. They just might succeed. The door from the hallway banged open. Four cranks burst into the room, all of them looking healthy enough for a fight. They scattered in different directions. One jumped on Eris before he could get off a shot from his launcher. He sprawled onto his back as the female straddled him, reaching for the boy's throat. Rachel gave up trying to aim a shot without hitting her friend and ran in, using the launcher as a battering ram, slamming its hard tip into the side of the woman's head. She shrieked and toppled off Eris. Then Rachel shot a grenade into her chest. Eris himself seemed traumatized by the attack, snapping from the strain. From somewhere within his pockets, he pulled out a knife and, screaming with rage, swung off his back and rammed the blade's tip into the chest of the electrified crank lying next to him. The electricity hadn't dissipated enough to do this,
A jolt of energy made him cry out and fly backward, knocking Rachel to